howdy, everybody, and I hope y'all are doing great, and thanks for listening to us here on Expanded Perspectives. I'm Cam Hale. Joining me, as always, is my coffee-slamming friend across the table, Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody?
I tried to catch him while he was taking a drink, and he got it done too quick.
Oh, well, I had the coffee in my mouth.
I was going to throw it to him.
Hey, we've been doing some upgrades around here by the studio now.
Yeah.
We haven't released any photos yet, but I know some listeners have already been capturing photos from when we were periscoping
right.
and posting it on Twitter and stuff. And I'm going to release some new photographs this week. But yeah, we've been working on the studio. We totally replaced a lot of the sound absorbing foam that
the
was in
foam,
here.
Yeah.
And it looks much nicer. So
it was basically an old egg crates off of a bed that we had had to put up to try to cancel out some of the foam. And now we've actually got real studio audio foam up in here.
Yeah. And so I'm not sure if it's going to make a difference or not. I definitely don't think it's going to get sound worse than it used to.
That's true.
But we feel more professional just sitting in here.
That's right. So now we know there's no excuse. There's no excuse. Well, we hope everybody had a wonderful weekend. Everybody got out and had a good time. Hope this is going to get everybody fired up. Now, Kyle and I have been talking about not really changing things up, but spreading things out some more. And we know that we've got a lot of listeners around the world. So we're going to start kind of touching on other areas that have really unique crypto things. And we've had a couple of really good friends of ours, Mr. Chris Copeland, Mr. Warren Dare, on several times before, and we've discussed with them a lot of the crypto, I guess you could call it crypto when you start talking about thylacines down in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So we are, and Kyle even made mention of it about some Yowie stuff on Thursday show. So we are going to get into a little Australian crypto, and then we're going to get into some Yowies and things. So we're going to kind of mix this up. We're going to start making it a thing to do around the world. We're going to start touching on some strange crypto stories from different areas. So,
yeah.
Just to get this whole thing, we'll get this ball rolling, folks. We're going to have some fun today. Now, I'm sure if you've listened to Micah Hanks or Ben and Aaron at Mysterious Universe, you've listened to them when they bring up the bunyips.
Mm-hmm.
And I've even discussed the bunyip, which is, you know, we discussed it was said to hide in swamps. It's in like the creeks and the watering holes of those areas over there. And it comes from Aboriginal mythology is where it comes from. But it actually, the bunyip is a word that is translated actually to mean devil or evil spirit. Now, that's one of the strange crypto creatures that they have, of course, in Australia. They also have had a little bit there. And on remember in Tasmania, in there was a carcass in 1960 that, of course, the crypto man himself, Ivan Sanderson, I believe was in 62, named this, actually coined this term. And it had washed up on the coastline down there, and it was called a globster. Or a blob. And basically, it was said to have no visible eyes or a defined head and no bone structure. So that was kind of something strange that washed up. And I know in the news that we've been seeing a lot of this 20-foot great white that these people have filmed up around a shark cage, which is a hell of a big shark. Well, also, too, of course, in Australia, we've talked about with Mike and me and Kyle have laughed about because it comes from, makes a few appearances, of course, in the old Pecos Bill stories, but it is a hoop snake. And it sounds like it may be fictional where a snake bites onto its own tail. It's almost cartoon-like.
Mm-hmm.
And it rolls like a hula hoop. And
yeah, it sounds like urban legend, right?
It does. It really does. Now, like I said, I touched on a little bit of the thylacine, but there was also the reports of a cryptid called the Queensland Tiger, which was said to have lived in the area of Queensland there in eastern Australia. Now, there's a native name, the Yari, and it's basically described as being a dog-sized feline with stripes and a long tail, prominent front teeth, and a very, very, you know, displeasured temperament. Not a very happy camper at any time. Now, when we describe it like that, it sounds like the thylacine when you start talking about the way it looks. And there's, you know, I believe that there was a book written, The Wild Animals of Australia, and it was called The Striped Marsupial Cat at the time. But I believe that that's kind of what the thylacine turned out to be. So that's really nothing too off base of what Warren and Chris have found, and those guys do an amazing job documenting all that they document. But I found something that I found kind of fascinating down there. Now I know without even going down there, and I would love to go to Australia, but the center of Australia in the outback is huge. I mean, that's a huge kind of untouched, unpopulated area of the world right in that area.
Australia is a continent as a whole, doesn't have a very large population.
Yes. So I can only imagine what could possibly hide in there. And we know in that area, this is a cool story that comes out of there. This is the Megalania, folks. And basically, I'm going to, well, I'll tell you what, before we get into that a little bit, I'm going to play you this little clip right quick. I want you to listen to this.
We come along here, and I heard what I thought was a cow walking towards me, sort of behind me up here. And I didn't take much notice at first, and as I got closer, I turned to look at it, and it was a big lizard. Sort of walked along here, went up there and sort of sat up where that log was.
He was scary.
Well, I reckon he would have been as big as me, counting his tails. His legs would have come out here, and his legs would have been as thick as my legs as well.
His back was probably about that high off the ground, I reckon. The way it was walking down the track here towards me, it obviously didn't care that I was at the end of the track. It was just going to walk through me or around me. I felt like it was probably further up the food chain than I was.
What do you think about that, Kyle?
Man, that is crazy, right? It sounds like a giant goanna or something,
yeah, right?
It does. It's very scary.
Well, listen to this one little part right here.
So what did they see? Was it a relic? A reptile survivor? Because there were real monsters here, and the greatest was called Megalania.
It's massive, a truly formidable reptile, and it was living here just a few thousand years ago, which, relatively speaking, in evolutionary terms, was just yesterday.
Megalania was a very large monitor lizard, probably reaching a length of somewhere between 5 and 7 meters. You can see the vertebrae of Megalania and vertebra of a large Australian monitor. So you can see it's substantially larger than any of the ones living today in Australia.
So, I mean, we know that it was a real animal at one time. It really existed.
At one time it did, yes.
Yeah, so it's very conceivable to me that maybe there still is a small population of them.
Well,
I mean, like we were just talking about, the population, I mean, Australia is a huge continent,
mm-hmm.
and they only have a population of like 25 million people, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's more than that in the state of Texas.
Yeah, exactly. And
California has like over 300 million people in it.
That's great. That's
so there's
too many
a
people.
Lot of open territory. And a lot of people also think that Australia is all like from the Mad Max films. You know, they have rainforest.
Yeah.
They have everything. I mean,
yeah.
there's a lot of wine country. They grow a lot of wine. They have the beaches. They have the desert. They have everything. There could be large portions that just simply no white man is living in.
Yeah, the Aboriginals could have definitely seen it. And
they talk about it. It's interesting why every continent or every place in the world where the locals prophesize and tell people about the legends of the animals or things that existed, and people just write it off like now they don't know what they're talking about. Why
right.
is that?
I have no. They don't want to listen because they believe that they are smarter than the natives.
Yeah, that's what it almost always is.
That's what they believe. That they believe that because we may live in buildings and maybe they don't. Maybe they're nomadic. Maybe they live in...
Yeah.
That we're smarter. You're like, really? Because I kind of like their lifestyle better.
Yeah. No, you were just in dream time. You didn't really see
yeah,
that.
Right. Yeah. Right. right exactly. Well, the name is actually Megalania Prisca, and it actually came from Sir Richard Owen. He coined it in 1859. It means ancient great roamer. So after listening to those little stories and knowing, let me read you a few things right here. Now, in July of 1979, Mr. Rex Gilroy, and you and I have even discussed some of this, but he was informed about footprints of a creature that was found in a plowed field. And across the field, there was like 30 or so tracks of what he claimed looked like giant lizard tracks. Now, he said rains had ruined most of them in that area, but he was able to make a plaster cast of one of them. All right, and it looked like a track that could have been made by the Megalanian. All right, now there was also a 79 sightings in that area, but if you were going to have a sighting, this is what's cool to me. If you were going to have a sighting, the best witness you could possibly want would probably be like a herpetologist, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, guess what? They had that.
Oh, really? A herpetologist actually had a sighting?
In the field, Frank Gordon was doing a little field work at the time at the Wadigan Mountains in New South Wales. He goes strolling back to his truck, okay, and jumps in it, packs his stuff, fires up the engine. And at first, what he said he thought was a log starts kind of scampering off into the brush.
Ooh.
He said it ended up being a lizard, what he guessed was around 30 foot or more in length.
Right.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Now, also, there was a farmer said he saw a giant lizard walking in one of his fields, and it walked along a wire fence so that the farmer had used it. The sections in between the fence posts to measure how long this lizard was. And he guessed it between 20 and 25 feet.
Well, even that is brilliant because he's using it for scale. That's a mistake that a lot of people don't. mm-hmm. do, is they never look at anything at scale. That's why they always say, oh, man, it must have been 12 foot tall. Was it really?
Yeah.
But if he knows that he was able to scale something, I mean, he instantly thought of that when he was watching it. Yeah. That's what a typical hunter does.
Well, and here's another thing, too, because when I first read that, I was like, okay, could he have been wrong?
Well, sure.
But here's the thing. You would be able to tell which side of the fence that lizard was on.
And he's a herpetologist.
Well, this is a different guy. This is a farmer that saw this, that did this. Now, you'd be able to tell which side of the fence that lizard was
Absolutely.
On, correct?
Yeah.
If it was on the backside where the fence was between you and the lizard,
mm-hmm.
and it was farther away, it would be smaller.
Yes.
All right? If it was on the front side, you could tell that the fence post... The lizard was between you and the fence.
Yes.
The lizard would be bigger, but you could tell that it was closer. You would get a better view. So knowing that he was at least close enough to use that to be 20 to 25 feet, the lizard might have been bigger because the fence was in between them and he could still use that for reference.
Right.
So it could have possibly been 30 to 40 foot, which is kind of strange because you get into that. Now, this actually comes from 1968. This is a fellow named Steve sent this. And it says, during October of 1968, I was with my unit on a jungle training exercise deep in forest country, inland, from Shoalwater Bay on the Normanby Range north of Rockhampton, when we came upon a dead cow in a remote swampy area. The cow had been torn apart by some massive beast, which, by the cow's appearance, would have been of considerable size and strength to have literally ripped the cow in half the way it had.
Wow.
We found large reptile tracks and tail marks in the mud about the area of the kill. It now became obvious to us all that the cow had been killed elsewhere on some pasture land far off and dragged through the forest to this swamp where it had been devoured. My mates took fright, and so did I. We left the area in some haste. Now, the cow was a fresh kill, not even hours old. The 20-inch or so width of the claw marks in the mud, their distance apart, plus the tail marks, suggested to us that the reptile was up to 30 feet long. We had also examined the drag marks for some distance through the forest, and the path trampled through the foliage in the opposite direction by the monster perhaps only half an hour before. Now, if the monster had been up to 30 foot in length, it must have been of considerable weight. Now, he goes on to say that perhaps this reptile was a fully grown megalana. Now, there was one more here that I kind of found interesting, and this came from 1977. There was teenage sisters Karen and Susan. And they said they were together with two boys, an Alan and a Tom, and they were all walking along a jungle track in a mountain country near Townsville when they saw a huge reptile emerge about 100 yards ahead of them from out of the dense forest on the edge of a swamp. Says, we took fright and hid behind some bushes watching the creature. Karen said that some years later, said it looked like it was a goanna, only it was far, far too big for that. It had a large goanna-like head, a long neck, a huge, almost elephant-like body, enormous legs and big claws, and a long, thick tail. Said the creature was covered thoroughly with large scales of a mottled gray color. It stood parallel with the swamp. Said we all estimated its length from head to tail to be a good 40 feet, and its height was about 6 foot tall while standing on all fours.
Wow.
They said we watched the monster begin moving off, trampling foliage as it moved back into the forest, and then we got out of there fast. Says no one believes us still to this day, but we know what we saw. Now, we get that a lot with a lot of these strange crypto creatures. And a lot of people see them, and they report it, and they're like, but we know what we saw.
Yeah.
You know, you don't. And look, I'm sure there's lots of things. I'm sure I could probably mistake a giant monitor lizard or something, even if it was large for its size, for being way bigger than what
like
it was.
Like a Komodo dragon or something.
You're right. But yeah. I'll always think of this. In the circle that I grew up in, and especially here in Texas, pig hunting or hog hunting was always a big thing. And men, it's almost like bass fishing.
Yeah.
People always lie or get a little carried away about the size of their fish.
They're one-uppers.
Like, it must have been an 8-pounder. And then you look at the photograph and it was about a 4-pound fish.
Yeah.
Or you look at a hog or a picture of a hog and you know, the way they're built, they look like a barrel with legs.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at that and the people are like, man, that big had to weigh 350, 400 pounds. And you get it and it's about 175 pounds.
Yeah.
You're like, eh. So I understand that it can visually, people get a little carried away. But you never hear anybody go, man, that pig must have weighed 1,500 pounds and it only weighs 300.
Right, yeah.
So it's one thing to make a mistake that there's an 8-foot, maybe, giant lizard here and it's only 6 foot, or it's a 10-footer and it's only 8 foot. You don't tell it's an 8-foot lizard and it's 40 feet. You know what I mean? You don't go, well, that's a 40-foot lizard and it's only 8 feet. That's kind of a hard thing to mistake. We even talk about people mistaking black panthers and their house cats, big black house cats. I understand, you know, 4 or 5 feet one way or the other, but you're talking about a discrepancy of over 30 feet when you start talking about maybe an 8 foot monitor compared to a 40 foot lizard. So that's one of those things to me that's, it's hard to go, man, I think I may have not saw that, or maybe I misidentified that.
You know, why is it so fantastical to believe that these things exist? I mean, they know that they existed at one time. Mm-hmm. To me, whenever it's a cryptid animal and they know that it existed at one time, to me it seems very believable. Like we're talking about the population. There's so much of the outback is just not encumbered by civilization. Why couldn't there be a pocket of these giant lizards still walking around?
Well, I agree. And I guess what I should have done, and thinking about it while you're talking, it made me think of it, as I should have looked into the average age or the life expectancy of like iguanas and monitor lizards and things like that to know how long they lived. And the reason I say that is because everybody that's a cryptozoology fan always goes back to the coelacanth. They always say, well, everybody believed that was extinct for millions of years, and then we found one in the 20s, you know, and this, that, and the other, and all that. But, and you have to have a viable breeding population, and you also have to have them to be a long life. You know, if you don't have maybe a viable breeding population, but if they lived 40, 50, 60 years, well, then you're going to be able to have a rash of sightings. As, you know, they may be slow breeders. They may only have one or two, you know, babies in their lifetime. Well, then they may be. That's how it works out, I guess, is what I'm saying, is you're more likely to see something as it lives longer because the odds raise that you're going to see something like that. So I'm with you. Is we knew it existed before, just like when we talked to Chris and Waz, and they talk about the thylacine sightings. We knew this creature existed before in this area, you know, in this area less than 100 years ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I mean,
this Megalania, what is a few thousand years ago that they've know they have found that it existed in that area.
They have skeletal remains of the thing.
Exactly. So maybe there are pockets. We talked about Mkaleum Bembe before. We've talked about these pockets of areas in this very dense foliage. Maybe they don't have to travel that far. And every now and again when they do is when people see them, or when the people get deep up into those areas is when they see them. That's just what the things that I think about is, why couldn't this be real?
Right. Well, according to the National Geographic Society, the average age or lifespan of a Komodo dragon is 30 years.
Okay, wow. So, all right. So, okay, there's a chance. So what they claim is every generation of human beings is not done by death. It's done by generations. It's 25 years. So basically, if they had an infant and everything, it could. So every generation now in the last could have its own giant lizard. And that's if it lived 30 years, maybe it lives longer. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it lives 60.
Who knows? Yes. I mean, I'm with you. Is the odds of it being real to me is something that this could actually be something that was there.
That's what I think. Well, speaking of strange cryptids in Australia and the land down under, let's talk about the Yowie.
I knew we were going to get into this one. I love this, man.
Now, and I love the sightings of the Yowie, too. Anyone who's a Bigfoot fan knows about the Yowie. The Yowie is basically just Australia's that's their version of Sasquatch or Bigfoot. And also in the northern areas, there's, you know, sightings of the Orang Pendek. And the locals in Australia, they just refer to it as the hairy man. And some of the Aborigines use the word Yowie to describe this. Now, the sightings of the hairy man, they're not all, it's not just like they've had a few sightings of this thing. I mean, they've had numerous sightings pretty much since people started inhabiting Australia. You know, I'm referring to the white men. But and they've even had sightings as groups of 30 or more have seen it at one time. So you're not just talking about one person that had a sighting.
Mm-hmm.
Groups of people have seen it. Now, when the white man first started settling in Australia in the late 1700s, the native Aborigines actually told them a great deal and details about the ape-like beast that lived in their forest. And, of course, the first settlers thought that this was just a tale used to scare them away. So that, you know, they didn't want them to live there. So they thought they could weave this story, but it's not true. You know, the Aborigines swear that this is a real thing. And one of the first official reported sightings took place in 1790. And it was by a white man, and it was released to a local newspaper in a small town at that time called Sydney. Of course, now it's gigantic. Now, during the 1800s, there were numerous reports followed throughout New South Wales and also in the other territories as well. And by the 1800s, there was a buzz about this creature, and there was newspaper clippings. You can actually go and find some of these newspaper clippings and magazine clippings where they have these stories of this ape-like man. Now, the earliest known southern sighting was reported in 1849 on Phillip Island in Victoria. Now, it stated at that time that several people have observed this creature, which was only 6 to 7 feet tall, that resembled half baboon, half man. And at the time of the sighting, the creature was said to be sitting on the edge of a lake when, of course, they shot at it. Now, you know, why is that always everybody's first response?
Yeah, right.
What is that? I don't know. Shoot it.
Shoot it. Shoot that thing. Yeah, whatever it is.
Right. Now, across the border in South Australia, at approximately the same time, there were reports hitting the newspapers and Aborigines telling their stories of the Narkuna, or the Yowie, which lived in their area. And even in Western Australia, in the mid to late 1800s, three white men one time on an expedition told of their strange encounter with a creature that resembled a monkey. And in April 1871, a man named George Osborne saw a gorilla-type creature coming down a tree, and it scared his horse. Now, he said this creature was only 5 feet tall, but was totally encumbered with black hair. So there's been these sightings all over of these Yowies, and much like we were talking about the giant lizard, I mean, I think that there's any place in the world that a creature like this could exist, Australia is probably one of the best places on Earth for one to exist, just simply because it's how big it is and how small the population is.
I agree, and I also think it's something to note that there's no known primates in the continent of Australia.
That's right.
So whatever this is, that's the thing I think that really blows me away when we start talking about the Yowie, and when people bring it up and they do all these stories and these sightings, is people are seeing something. They're reporting seeing something that's primate-like, all right? But there's no known primates that's ever been on that place. So, I mean, you're like, what could that be?
And people discount people's eyewitness accounts. I mean,
yeah.
If you have enough people on a jury, you can convict somebody of bank robbery or a murderer with just eyewitness mm-hmm. accounts. But when it comes to cryptid sightings, no, they can't be trusted. So, I mean, I wonder why that is.
So do we make the ruling right here is if there's more than 12 people in a group, not that it'd seen it, but if there's more than 12 people in a group see one thing, then that sighting had to be real.
That's, yeah.
Because right. If you do it in a jury, I mean, how come it can't be real with that, right? Because there's not a guy in a black robe in there with you.
Right.
You know what I mean? You got to be a guy in a black robe. So there's got to be 12 people and one guy in a black robe that has to swing a wooden hammer, and he has to go, okay, that was real.
Right. That's exactly. Well, let's get into some of these stories. Yeah. Now, this first one comes from 1995, and it's in an area called Bathurst, New South Wales. And the person telling the story wishes to remain anonymous. But anyways, it says, I was 9 years old at the time, and I was camping with three friends. And one of my friends, Dad's. We had driven for a while out of Bathurst to these cabins in the middle of the bush. There were two or three cabins, but we were the only occupants. Our encounter happened at noon in the middle of winter. Outside of our cabin was a mountain covered in bush. We decided that we would climb to the top of the mountain. There were no marked trails, so it took us quite a while to get through the bush and up on top of that hill. It was normal, open, scrubby brush with tall trees, rocks scattered around. We were about halfway up, and it was getting pretty steep to the top of the ridge. There were a few mountain goats around. I turned to my right, and I looked over my shoulder. I saw this dark figure, thing, about 40 meters away, going down a tree. It was a little above up on the mountain, with some small trees between it and us. I didn't know what it was. I got everyone's attention, and we saw this hairy beast about 6 feet tall climbing down the tree. It sort of stepped out and down and out of the tree, one foot hitting the ground and then the other. The way it was climbing the tree was like you see people climbing coconut trees. It sort of spotted us, and it stood there just staring at us. And then it crouched down beside the tree. Initially, it seemed quite frightened, and then it stood upright again. We ran down the hill about 10 meters or so, turned around and saw it still looking at us from where it was standing beside that tree. We ran down another 10 meters, turned and looked back, but it had disappeared. We ran down the hill as fast as we could, and we told my friend's father what we had seen. Of course, he didn't believe us, but there was nobody living there. He didn't know what to think. It was as big as a ginormous man. My friend's dad was 6 feet tall, and it would have been taller than him. It was well-built. Hairy, dark brown, almost black. It's hard to picture it, but sort of like dog fur. It had hair all over except on its face. It was very muscular and well-built, sort of like a brick you-know-what house, like a bodybuilder, even a wrestler, I didn't see the mouth or the nose, but I just remember these huge eyes staring right at us the whole time. The head was round, with the neck just like a human, but really thick. This place was remote. There is no way a man would have been out there in a suit. So, what did he see? I mean, anybody could also say that perhaps there's a species of ape that lives in Australia that's just undiscovered. I mean, remember we always talk about the gorillas weren't even discovered until the early 1900s. It could be. It could be just an ape. Or it could be the leftover of some kind of Cro-Magnon-like man. I mean, they know that there was an Australopithecus that lived in that country or that continent at one point in time. Is this the remnants of that? Is it a hybrid between a Homo sapien and an Australopithecus? I mean, is that possible? Or is it another subspecies of a Sasquatch-like creature? But I believe that this guy or girl, whoever saw this, I mean, they weren't alone. They were with friends. Mm-hmm. So multiple people all saw the same thing. And, you know, and it didn't do anything outlandish. It wasn't tree knocking or yelling at them or throwing rocks at them or even growling. It was like they just saw it climb down the tree and it saw them see it. And what did it do? You hear about this a lot in North America. It crouched down, tried to make itself look small. And then after a while, it stood back up because it noticed, well, they've got me. They see me. I'm not fooling them. And then it just stared there. I mean, the same thing deer do. Mm-hmm. When you spook a deer, I mean, they will stare at you. And I'm sure bow hunting, you just have a stare off and you don't move a muscle. And sometimes those things will go 5 minutes.
And not move. Yeah.
Yeah. I picture that's what this thing did. Just a lot of animals' first response is to freeze.
Well, and we hear all the time, too, like you talked about, they crouch down, they look like a stump. Or you hear them where they do the tree peeking, where they get behind a tree
and
just barely look out from behind it to try to spot you. Man, it's strange. I don't know why. I don't know. It's a very strange thing over there. I wish I could go. I wished I could have. I had already. I don't know. I wished I had spent some time in Australia by now. You know, I wish I had visited and seen all this because I'd like to, in my mind, picture what it's like and get a feel for what everybody thinks of over there. Because I know here in the States, it's a little bit different.
Right.
And when I say that, it's almost like they believe that maybe there could be a primate or something over here. And maybe the people in Australia, I don't know, listeners, maybe y'all can, you can email us or message us or something. Maybe it's the same way. Maybe they look at it and go, well, you know, here in Australia, it makes more sense. Whereas in the U.S., it doesn't make as much sense. I don't know if it's because I'm used to it here, because we cover so much of it as where it's different, where I feel like it's different over there. But it's really not. It's exactly the same as it is here. There's just way more land with way less people.
Right.
So it makes even more sense to me that something like that could be out there, I guess, is the way it should be. I don't know. It just feels so strange. But I don't know, man. I get blamed for this all the time. You and I get all these messages. Stuff. I am fascinated with crypto. That may be the one thing. I always say ancient history, and it is. But the one thing on the fringe that I like the most is probably crypto creatures. And I guess it's because we've spent so much time in the woods. It's one of those things that I enjoy it more than anything.
I do too.
And it's because it's not easily explained. It's not easily explained going, it's just an unknown animal. Or is it something that's, you know, does it walk the line between realities? You know, I don't know what this is. But I've got you one, man. I've got me one here. This comes from Bilpin, New South Wales, all right, from 2014. You're going to get a kick out of this. All right, here we go. This took place at 11:40 a.m. It says, I took my girlfriend bushwalking at this site. We were about 300 meters from the end of the track, and she was 30 meters ahead of me. Now I'm a big guy, and I was watching my footing on some of the slippery footing there. And Rose is part deaf and talks quite loudly, and we'd been silent for a fair bit of time, and our footfall had been quiet due to the wet conditions. And she asked me if I was okay, and as soon as she spoke, a huge frame burst through a thicket of young coachwood and calicoma away from us. It made the crashing noise for about 3 seconds, and then all went silent. Now, I'm a hunter, and I grew up in the bush, and was expecting to hear hooves clattering over the nearby creek bed from a red deer. Rose was still calling as I told her to stop talking. She is from the Philippines and has no knowledge of Aussie animals or yowies, and I made no further mention of it to her so she wasn't scared. In a state of alertness, I looked for tracks or ground disturbance, but found none on the track. Leaf litter off the track is about a half inch to a foot deep. Now, we proceeded to the end of the track to where there's a bridge across a creek and a viewing area for a small waterfall there. Now, Rose took the stairs down to the creek and I followed. We had been standing there for about 10 seconds. That's when I heard a definite sound of a dense object being banged against a tree trunk of some size, but only once. And we climbed the stairs, and at this point, I was sure that we were being watched by something, animal, human, or other. So as we grabbed the drink from my backpack, I took out my decent-sized bush knife and slipped it into my waistband. We took some quick photos and then started to walk out. Rose knew something was worrying me and asked if I was okay. And I told her some throwaway line, and we just started walking. In roughly the same area that we heard the crashing through the vegetation, the breeze carried up from the creek a distinct odor of sewage, like that found coming off of pump-out trucks that service our suburbs. I'm used to different smells of decay in the forest, as I've worked with the natural resource sector nearly all my life. I'm also familiar with the sounds of bodies moving through vegetation at different speeds, and I'm positive that this was no animal. Now, the trip, though uneventful, was one thing was very odd, and it was the lack of bird activity. We had gone through several kinds of vegetation that would have noisy bird activity in it at the time of the day, but there were no birds from the time we left the car to the time we returned. Says, I hope this account helps you. And I have told you honestly what happened to myself and Rose just a few weeks ago. My cousin, of course, he visits that area too. Now, I love how he makes a point to say there was no bird activity.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing that, as you spend time in the woods, that you start noticing little things like that is you can always pick up on it. If you just go and sit in the woods, I wouldn't say camouflage yourself, but you could. Go get camouflaged up, slip into the woods at daylight or at dark and wait for it to get daylight. As it gets daylight and you're brushed up, you'll be able to hear basically the world come alive. And what's funny is when you see, I've seen coyotes and bobcats and things come through, the birds will get quiet. The squirrels will start barking like an alarm, and they'll be barking and it'll carry through the woods. They're talking to each other. It's funny how the animals, you know, they alert one another that there's a predator in the woods.
You're right.
And it's almost like the minute that they knew it, not that Yowie, I don't know, jumps and grabs birds and anything like that, but they left. They flew. They got away. They had the ability to leave. They left. So it's dead silence in the woods. And that's the first telltale sign. You're like, man, that is strange.
Yeah.
He didn't have an open video, a view of it. He heard it. He smelt it. The tree knock, something like that. He didn't get a full-on view and was hard to see, no tracks, because he talks about the leaf litter where they were in a pretty thick area. But he could tell that it wasn't just a red deer. It wasn't just a normal animal like that. It was something big moving through the bush.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like. Now, here's an encounter by a man named Neil Frost and Ian Price, and they're talking about their Yowie sighting. Let's listen to that.
Through the low scrub, knee-height scrub, across the track, which is a fire trail, 8 feet wide, just track. Then through knee-height scrub again into the bush and down into the valley. And I saw him really clearly for 200 feet. And as clear as I can see he is now, except the colour wasn't there because of the moonlight.
Large, six and a half feet.
7 foot tall.
Big shoulders.
Two of me in build, in bulk. Not twice as high, but say 7 foot tall, but a lot of body mass, big body mass, huge, massive. Well, I weigh 100 kilos, so we're looking at an animal that's at least probably three times my body mass. Well, we're talking big beast. We're talking like, yeah, well, it doesn't matter if I catch it because it's not going to hurt, not for long.
Were you surprised when you saw it?
No.
Did you ever expect to see it?
Because you've been
so big?
We've been chasing the bastard for ages. You get an idea. Well, it bumps through the bush and sounds like a bloody elephant.
Yeah.
It sounds like Steve Roach on steroids. Mate, it's still a big beast, eh? And you can tell. You don't run through the bush here, a freight train, when you're, you know, a little nymphet.
Yeah. Did you ever worry that it might turn around and bite you?
No, why?
I don't know, it might hurt. Even if it's only for a short time.
Well, that'd be famous posthumously. Yeah. Rips me out and stuffs my arms down the hole there. Name it after me, please. It goes like, but think about it. Look, Neil's a school teacher and has lived a school teacher's life. I've been in biker gangs, I've been in jail, I've been a drug dealer, I've sold guns, women, drugs. I've done all the things in life that you've probably heard about but never tried. And Okay, so there's a big hairy beastie out there that won't beat me up. Lots of big hairy beasties that want to beat me up, only they were called guys in other bike clubs.
Have you always had a pretty open mind when it comes to things that are sort of outside the accepted spectrum?
Yeah. Oh, of course, because, like, well, why shouldn't there be one here? I mean, this mountain mass runs all out to Queensland. And let's face it, who goes walking through down there? Nobody. Like, you look at the Grose River Valley. No one goes there. Why? Why would you want to?
So that's pretty interesting.
Yes.
And I love the way this story, I mean, the guy's like a biker, and he's not scared by things, but he seemed to be a little bit concerned about what he had seen. Now, let's listen to this next story. Now, we're going to kind of go, you know, the first two stories we read were only from New South Wales. I've got some stories here from different parts of Australia. Now, this one's from Queensland, and this happened in 1950 in an area called Aramara. Now, it says, it's vivid in my memory to this day, although the incident occurred some 50 years ago. My memory has been jolted due to the reports recently in the Australian newspapers, and in particular, an article in our local paper, the Northern Territory News. I was about 10 years old when this happened, and my dad owned a pineapple farm in the hill country and scrubby ranges at North Aramara, which was a small settlement some 40 miles in the hinterland of Maryborough in southern Queensland. On weekends, I would pedal my bicycle about 6 miles and stay for the weekends with folks by the name of the Johnsons. Now, Charlie Johnson worked at a local sawmill, and Miss Violet Johnson was the local postmistress and telephone exchange operator. And the Johnsons also owned property and ran a herd of dairy cows. Now, plenty of hands were there to milk the cows, as Charlie and Violet had produced a small tribe of kids. And the ritual, 7 days a week and nights, and mornings was to hand milk the herd and then crank up the old pom-pom diesel engine to drive the cream separator to fill the cans with cream for the carrier to take to the butter factory. I joined in all the activity, and one of our tasks was to go into the paddock and fetch the herd for milking. There was a large portion of this property we called the flat, which was open grassland, but the further end of the property went on up to the ranges that were covered with eucalyptic forest trees, and in some sections with lantana scrub. We three boys, Errol, Bevan, and myself, followed the cow trail up the ridge to the range where we could hear several of the cowbells jingling in the far distance. Accompanying us were the Johnsons' three dogs, one of which carried the reputation of a fearless fighter who would have a go at anything. Much of the herd had decided to really go bush this day, and they were way back in the back of the property on the highest portion of the range, where it bordered into thick scrub. We had sighted some of the milkers. They were really quiet most of the time, and we normally could go to sleep leaning against their warm flanks while milking them. One of the bell carriers gave a startled jump and proceeded to run towards us. The occasional jangle of the cowbells turned into a whole sound, much like a symphony or a mad ringer of notes. And they started running towards us. They tore right past us, gathering their kind until some 40-odd beasts were in a stampede down the range. Pup, the leading dog, was a fearless mongrel, and he was scared of nothing. He gave a yelp, spun around, and scooted after the cattle, followed by his two canine companions. They all had one thing in common. Their spinal hair had been instantly ridged back, much like a Rhodesian ridgeback. Their tails were between their legs. The boys were somewhat perplexed, as we could see nothing to warrant this bizarre behavior. Of course, I now realize that the cattle and the dogs were able to detect something unusual before we human beings were able to. Then we saw it. I can only describe it as a wooden wine barrel-sized object, covered in jet black hair, with an indistinguishable facial features. It was moving over the ground very quickly towards us, with a peculiar, upright, lumbering gait. We could hear it utterly guttural, grunting sounds as it ran. I'm not sure who was the first to reach the gates of the paddock. Some 2 miles below, it may have been the making herd of the dogs, but one thing I am sure of is we three boys would not have been far behind. We broke the 4-minute mile, believe me. Now, Charlie Johnson tore strips of us as he and the others in the family observed the lickety-split flight of the milking herd, dogs and boys, and naturally drew the conclusion that we were to blame for running the cattle. How the hell Are we ever going to get any milk from these cows tonight? Charlie exclaimed. We all knew that returning a herd of milkers made them withhold their milk. No one, to my knowledge, had encountered or heard much of the Yowie at that time. How could you explain to others what we all saw? We told it to Charlie. He didn't believe us, but we know what we saw. The Yowie is real. I have seen it. So that's crazy.
There's some really good sightings, really good reports. It almost seems like, you know, you listen to it, it almost seems like there's it. It's more interactive than the Bigfoots that we have. You know, now we do get some good interactive stories, but you can tell that the stories from Australia and the stories from here, it's the same, I guess you could say, subspecies.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the same deal. I've got you one here. This comes from the Northern Territory, from Yaba Station. All right, this took place in 1987. And the reason that I was drawn to this when I was talking about it is I kept thinking back to this. Remember the story we did where the fella tells his story there in Louisiana, I believe it was, where he was chased.
Yeah.
Out of his stand and was chased.
And he shot at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, without the firearms, here's a chase that took place. Now, this is Phyllis Kinney and friend Frank Burns were hunting with Phyllis's nephews when the sighting occurred about 5 p.m. on a Saturday back in 87. So they were driving through Yaba Station, about 50 kilometers north of Alice Springs, when they stopped at a favorite little spot called Top Boar. And the kids went to the bathroom while Phyllis shared around some kangaroo meat. Now, suddenly, this thing jumped up out of one of the water tanks, Phyllis said. And at first, I didn't know anything about it until one of the kids started screaming. The thing started walking towards the ute, and I shouted to the kids to get in. Now, the kids in the back of the ute had a better look at it, and they say it was a half-man, half-animal. Now, Frank just put his foot flat to the floor. He said it could have been a large aborigine because he said he would have waved and sang out to us, called out to us. Now, nephew Daniel Kinney said the thing looked like a gorilla. He said it was huge and covered with hair. He goes on to say the hair on its head grew to its elbows and its beard reached its chest. It had a large forehead, big eyes, and it was red around the mouth. Now, he says the red bit could have been blood because he believes that you would have seen it dripping, you know, if it would have been blood.
Yeah, right.
And all that. Now, he says that the height of the creature was 2 to 3 meters, and it was very fat. And he says it ran after the car the way monkeys run. It caught up and grabbed the tail of the ute and tried shaking the car. He says it was very strong. I noticed there were no cattle around, so it must have spooked them, too. Now, Daniel said the creature chased the group for about 60 meters before it gave up. Since I didn't make any noise or speak, I had a nightmare about it on that following evening, and I don't think I'll go out in the bush anymore, or at least not to that place. Now, Phyllis went on to say that no one had been drinking. Now, she says, usually we take a few beers with us, but not when the kids are with us. Now, they went straight to the police station in that area and let them know what had happened, and this is what they received. The police said they were too busy in town to go chasing after monkeys in the bush. So there's no follow-up on something that could possibly be about 8 or 9 foot tall and chasing down a truck. So,
well, do you think that the cops weren't interested in doing it because they thought the people were crazy? Or are the police privy to some information and be like, look, I'm not going out there and messing with it. Last week when we had another Yowie sighting, I mean, I'm scared to death of those things.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's you bring up a good point. I don't know. I don't know what it's like over there. I don't know what it would be with the way the police force, how they deal with these things. Maybe they get a lot of calls. They also have to cover a lot of area. That's a lot of area for people to work. I don't imagine they have massive amounts of police officers to cover all these areas out there. You know, it's kind of like a few of the game wardens in Texas have to cover multiple counties. So I can imagine they're like, look, you know, this sounds like a crazy story. Obviously something spooked you. Maybe some kids, maybe somebody was hoaxing you.
Right.
You know, we're not going to go mess with it, you know. Or is it like what we talked about in that story I told that time about they were tracking what they believed was to be dinosaurs in Australia, like a small T-Rex that they had tracked. Remember, and they had the police officer and all that stuff, heard all that sound, said he'd never go back out.
That's right.
And all those guys quit. So maybe they are privy to a little information over there.
Well, I always think of Linda Godfrey when she was talking to us and told us that, you know, back when she was working for the newspaper, she went into the sheriff's office and in his filing cabinet, he had a file called werewolves.
Yeah, right.
And then, I mean, it was like no big deal. She was like, well, what is that?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, these are occasionally these people see these werewolves and I just get a file here dedicated to all those sightings. Like, it's no big deal. I mean, don't think it's odd that you have a file of werewolf sightings?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I always think of that as like, how many of these, I picture like an old man around here wearing a cowboy hat, an old sheriff, and he's like, oh, yeah, we get sightings of Yowies from time to time.
They don't think anything of it.
Don't think anything of it.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, I've seen it before, but it's no big deal. It don't mess with me. I don't mess with it.
Exactly. Now, moving to South Australia, check out this sighting. This happened in 1995. Now, the person says, I'm 11 years old at the time. Jared Nicholson, his mate Fred, and three younger boys rode their bikes to a secluded dam about 30 minutes from Roxby Downs. They said that we were there no longer than 20 minutes when the youngest member of the group complained that someone in a fur suit was stalking in the bush. About an hour had passed before me and Fred saw it running, crouching, to another hiding spot. He stopped there behind a small dune, but kept watching. The three younger lads started heading back out. Fred and I were too curious to leave and crouched near the dam, just watching him. 10 minutes passed with no movement. So we proceeded carefully towards the thing. We closed half of the gap when the beast became enraged and stood up, revealing its true size. The thing was about 6 foot, maybe even 7 foot, very lanky and skinny, with tannish-colored hair on fur similar to that of a camel, covering its entire body except around the eyes. I was too scared to get any better look at it. He started towards us, and that was it. We turned and ran as fast as we could to those bicycles, and then we began pedaling our hearts out, not looking back for a second. Halfway home, my chain fell off.
Oh.
I screamed for my friend to stop, but he kept going. Better you than me, I suppose. I just dropped the bike and ran the rest of the way home. I was in trouble with the old man for leaving my bike behind, but that was the scariest thing that ever happened to me, and I was not worried about the bike. At the time, we believed that it wanted to attack us. But now I think he was just after a drink, and us little buggers were in his way. It was worth noting that the history of Australian exploration from 1788 to 1888, Ernest Fevenick wrote about two squatters named Oakden and Hulkus, who while searching for good grazing land to the west of Lake Torrens in 1851, were told by local Aborigines that an ape-like creature were sometimes seen in that area. Now this Roxby Downs, where we had our encounter, was only 80 kilometers west of that lake. So that's incredible.
It sounds like they got a friendship like ours.
Right?
Your chain come off, I'd be like, bro.
I'm out of here.
I am so sorry.
You're on your own.
I am so sorry, man.
Right?
That is a... See, but why do they sound mad all the time, right?
Yeah, well, and I like the way this one's described as skinny.
Yeah.
And lanky. The other one is described as barrel-chested and huge and muscular.
The skinny, lanky one, I would think, would be more apt to, like, the dry climates. You know what I mean? It's hot. Maybe there's not as much to eat.
Absolutely.
You know, it just, that's what, because, you know, you always, you see these animals, you know, lots of times, like, you see the coyotes or fox or something, and the desert animals are always seem, like, a little bit skinnier, a little bit more dry. Yes, a dry, a little bit more drawn, a little gaunt looking. I got you one that's strange here. All right, brother. Look, this comes from Wandering, Western Australia. This took place August 27th of 2012. It says, I recently purchased a property in Wandering, Western Australia, and yesterday a friend and I were driving, and we were about 2 kilometers out of town. Up ahead, I saw something crossing the road. I was traveling at about 100 kilometers per hour when I saw it. I slowed down to about 80, then I guess it took about 20 seconds to get to where it was. It was still light just before the sun was going down, and at first I thought it was a cow because it looked very robust. But when we got closer, it clearly was not. It was about human height, but when I asked my mate's opinion, he said from 6 to 9 feet. I also could not tell if it was on all fours or standing, as its front limbs were rather long.
Hmm.
My mate saw it when it was standing, so maybe that's what why he said it was taller, when I saw it was hunched over. Said it was completely black, but what I saw conflicts with some of the Yowie appearances, as it appeared to have long hair over its face, but it was certainly built like a tank and very thick set. Said, I used to be into bodybuilding, and I have seen some big guys, 130 kilogram plus, but this thing was certainly bigger than that. Its shoulders kind of merged with its head, but its head looked reasonably long. It moved like swaying through the shoulders. He says, I can't explain it well with words. The weirdest thing was how it just disappeared into thin air. My mate even said, it was like it disappeared before it even hit the tree line. And I can't understand the this sounds strange, but it's true, as I thought the same thing. The crazy thing was that there was nothing to hide in. There was only one line of trees, both on the side of the road, and then a very open paddock. He says he got home and did a little research and Googled it, and the closest thing he could come up to with was a Yowie. But what is that? He's talking about it run off.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of vanished. Now, was it because of the light, because of the setting sun? Was it something that maybe he just, it's black, maybe it just, maybe it dove off on its stomach to hide as it drove by, and then that's why it looked like it vanished? They couldn't see it real well? Or did it literally just vanish? Because we've had those reports, too, where these things just seem like they just blink out. Boom. One yep. minute they're there, you blink, and it's gone.
Yeah.
I don't know, but that's exactly, it sounds very similar to Sasquatch sightings in North America.
Mm-hmm.
That's why sometimes I think that maybe they're not physical. Maybe they're not real. Maybe it's more like a apparition.
It almost feels like that. And look, I know an apparition's not going to grab a car. An apparition allegedly is not going to beat on a tree. I get that part. But maybe it's something that we can't comprehend. That's the reason that we don't understand it, because we only have an idea of either it's ethereal as an apparition or it's flesh and blood. Maybe there is a mix. Maybe it actually can control matter, but it's not really a flesh and blood creature.
Right. Well, if you're interested in the Yowie, I suggest you go over to the Australian Yowie Research. This is a website, and it's called yowiehunters.com.au. They've got hundreds of sightings and stories, and much of the stories that we talked about today were actually from that website. They've got pictures. They got footprints. They got witness sketches. They got newspaper clips. They got audio recordings. All types of things. They got historical articles going back all the way to the 1800s. They've got Yowie art and sculptures if you want to purchase a Yowie sculpture. Anyways, very interesting. I enjoy the crypto stuff, especially in other parts of the world, and also the similarities between the ones we have here and the ones we have in other parts of the world. To me, I think there's a strong case for the Yowie. I think it could possibly exist.
Well, what I like the most about this site is the sketches. And the reason I like the sketches is because I know these people are spending a lot of time drawing. What's funny is if I was to take these sketches and not tell you where they were from and show you, you would instantly go, those are sketches of Bigfoot.
Right. Yeah.
The Americans would instantly go, that's a sketch of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
So there's something's going on. I mean, there's no way this many people are just hallucinating what's going on. The same as here. Something is going on. We can't explain it, but something's up.
I agree. We're going to take a break, and when we get back from the break, we're going to wrap the show up. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Thank you for those kind words, JW. I'm glad you enjoyed our segment on the Bridgewater Triangle. Seems like a lot of people enjoyed that. I enjoyed today's episode, too, though, man. I really like the Yowie stories. And the giant reptilian lizard, what was it called again?
The Megalania.
The Megalania. That's crazy.
I don't think that I'm glad we're doing this. It makes me pay more attention to what's going on in the world around me as much as you. So many times you focus on just what's in your area, just what's going on in your life, and you don't really think about what's all going on around everywhere else. And there's so many more interesting subjects and stories around the world. And I know we cover a lot of stuff, but I really like digging into some of the stuff like that, like we've done with the Black Shuck and things like that. I really like this, the Yowie sighting. Something about it, I don't know, I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I got something pretty cool here before we wrap this little jewel up. And it's just I guess I'm trying to make myself feel better with all the drones and drone stuff and autonomous robots and things. They're planning right now. There's an American company called Biocarbon Engineering, and they have announced that they are planning on planting 1 billion trees annually. A billion trees, Kyle.
That's a lot.
Annually. And they're going to be using the benefits of drone technology.
They'll use drones to plant the trees.
Yes. Now, this has come from the spiritscience.net. Now, it says Biocarbon is starting this project in order to deal with a massive deforestation that's happening, of course, in the world. Now, NASA engineer Lauren Fletcher's team analyzed the problem of cutting trees and came to the conclusion that people will not be able to deal with it unless they include technology. Now, the destruction of forests due to mining, agriculture, and urban expansion destroys roughly 26 billion trees every year globally. Now, we believe that the best way to resolve the industrial destruction is with using the latest automated technologies. Now, that's what Fletcher says.
Right.
Says, according to forecasts, the Earth will be without trees unless they find a better solution for the deforestation, which will replace the manual method that's currently in process. Now, Fletcher's team plans to use drones, over specifically marked areas where biodegradable plastic containers filled with seeds and fertile soil will be dropped. Now, once lowered into the ground, the seeds will be irrigated and monitored by the drones, and they will also supply the team with information on the status and progress of the trees. The plan is to plant 36,000 trees a day, and it will cost about 15% of the cost of traditional methods. Now, how awesome is that?
That's really cool.
Now, you had covered something along that at one time. I'm talking about sending out like little, they were going to be the drones, but it was something for like robotic bees. Remember we talked about where they could release them and do entire fields because it would be, you know, mathematically gridded up. You think about this. I believe, I can't remember. Is it Amazon, Kyle, that we saw the video to where the whole room is automated?
Yes.
Where everything's moving, the drones are moving, and the
Amazon.
Forklifts are moving.
Imagine there are humans there, but only very few.
Yes. Imagine that takes place in the fields. You grid it off. Now, I know you may have to put something out there, you know, some different like antennas where it will electronically grid itself, where they'll know where to go. But imagine that. So not only can they do that, can they go and drop them and put them in, they'll also be able to, some drones will probably deliver water, deliver certain nutrients. They'll be flying constantly in that field working. And they said it'll be about 15%. So maybe this is a good thing that we'll be able to do.
Not just planting, but I foresee drones doing harvesting.
Harvesting? What
drone
about picking up
lumberjacks?
Trash?
You know, when these trees grow to maturity, then the drones come in there and harvest the wood.
What about picking up trash?
Exactly.
You know, what if there's something like that?
No, the prisoners need to, they don't need to automate that. Let those guys pick it
up.
The
prisoners?
Yeah, I
think
so.
Okay, I'm with you. Okay.
Right? But we're going to have a lot more free time on our hands when we don't have to do any of these monotonous work out in the fields or lumberjacking or things like that. I mean, you'll be able to just chill by the pool, right?
I keep thinking of that was it the Disney or is it the Pixar movie WALL-E?
I haven't seen it, but I know what you're talking
when
about.
When there are all these giant fat people laying around because everything is automated.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be. We're all going to be like big blobs. Globsters. We're all going to be globsters.
That's funny. What's going on this week, Cam?
Man, I'm just work, baby. Just working and working. We got to prepare, and we're going to be doing some interviews coming up this week.
Yeah, we got a bunch of interviews.
We got a bunch
up.
Of interviews coming up. Man, we're gluttons for punishment. We always end up scheduling way too many. So this is what we're doing is we've got everything lined up the way we want, so we're jumping back on the interviews. So we're going to be reaching out to a lot more people. So we've got a lot of interviews coming up.
If you have any Yowie sightings yourself or any crazy stories you'd like to share with the show, don't forget you can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can also call in and leave a shout out or a story of your own, much like JW did on today's episode. That number is 817-945-3828. And if you like Expanded Perspectives, please go on iTunes and write us a review.
Yes.
We really like the reviews. And we know that there's several people in other parts of the world that have written reviews, and we're going to give you all a shout-out coming up soon. I have to go around and collect them for whatever reason. They're not in one database. You have to search it by country.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
Well, if you've written one and there's a few countries that maybe we don't know about, email us or message us and bring it up and go, hey, y'all guys a review. You know, this is where I'm from. Because there's a bunch of them that, I mean, you can go through them and go through them until you're blue in the face and there's none. And then we may skip a couple because you're trying to hurry and then we don't. So if you're out there, please. Yeah, we'll probably be getting into that. I'll tell you this right here. I'm going to get into it in the next show.
Okay, cool.
On next Monday's show, we'll do a bunch of shout outs. We'll go to everybody that's written us the reviews and we'll try to find as many as we can.
Right on. And if you'd like to support the show, much like we were talking about, we bought all this new audio foam. The best way to do that is sign up for Expanded Perspectives Elite. And when you join Expanded Perspectives Elite, you get an additional show every Thursday, and you have access to the back catalog. I think there's like 46 to 47 episodes there. So there's a whole bunch of shows you're missing out on. So,
and then Kyle will be Snapchatting with everybody. He sends out pictures of himself, selfies. He duck faces. He gets in the mirror and poses and flexes his arms with his shirt off and all that stuff. So if you're down with that, you can sign up because Kyle will definitely hook you up with all that.
Oh, everybody have a good week. Don't work too hard. For you elitist, we'll speak to you on Thursday. Everybody else, stay out of trouble.
For Pete's sakes, folks.
Right? Stay out of trouble.
Just once.
Work a little harder at your job, too. Don't cut out early every day.
Don't listen to Kyle. Do whatever you want to do. Life's too short. You don't got to work that hard. Come on. Just have fun. Give somebody a hug. Tell somebody you love them. Eat some chocolate. Eat some candy. Take your time. Have something sweet to eat. Unless you're diabetic, then don't do that.
Right.
You know? But other than that, everything else is fine. Have a little fun. You're not here for very long, so enjoy it while you're here. Yeah. We will talk to the rest of y'all on Thursday. Everybody else, we'll have a little surprise interview for y'all on Monday. Y'all take care, folks. Peace.